Scott Hughes, Rick Horton.
This is a season like no other.
Unbelievable start from Hamilton.
He's just insane.
Oh, and a touch! Verstappen is into the lead!
Come on!
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there. I like to let the music play for a little bit and let the tension build. How are you? I'm Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
This is the Two Soft Compounds, and it is the Australian Grand Prix this weekend. It's weird, isn't it? Because I feel like we've had them in sort of a slightly different order, I've been so used to Australia kind of starting the season. It feels a bit strange that we're now sort of three races in and it's the Australian Grand Prix.
Yeah, and it's 3 years since we've been to Albert Park, so it's going to be amazing to be back in the venue. And of course, they made changes to the track this year. They've reprofiled three corners on the Australian Grand Prix circuit. Have you seen the changes? Where do you think it's going to improve racing?
Yeah, I mean, it's some of these changes they're making for safety, aren't they? Some they're making to improve the racing, some they're just kind of modernising the tracks, and it's always a bit hit and miss because sometimes they make these changes and then re-tarmac the track and then it's a nightmare because there's no grip and the tarmac's too new, and then other times they re-tarmac it and it's really grippy and great, and so it's all a bit suck it and see till we get there, isn't it? But the Australian Grand Prix has always been one of my favourites, but as you know, like you just said then, Australia went into strict COVID lockdown, didn't they? And yeah, we've not had an Australian Grand Prix for a while, so I bet the fans are absolutely buzzing there.
Yeah, I saw some photos from the circuit. They've got they're sponsored by Heineken No Zero Alcohol. What's the point? And they've got lots of hoardings around the place talking about Danny Rick and basically doing the good day and the Australian welcome and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's going to be a celebration this weekend, that's for sure. When it comes to the racing, I suppose we can expect Charles Leclerc and Max Verstappen to be right up there. This time, though, with Carlos Sainz in the mix a little bit more, I would imagine.
Yeah, and I think, like I said before, I think we spoke about this last week, but it's nice to see these drivers that are kind of up there, and it's nice to see the drivers last year that are not doing so well, but they're on the bubble, aren't they? Like your Perez, you know, obviously got pole in the last race. It was very unlucky in that race, to be fair. Bad timing of the safety car. I was going to call it the security car then. The security car, get it on track. But yeah, the safety car was a timing issue for him. But, you know, Carlos Sainz just seems to be slightly behind Charles Leclerc this year in terms of driving that car. He's still sort of getting to grips with it. Max seems to be slightly behind Perez this year, which is interesting, but they're all up there, all four of those, and it's probably going to be, like you say, a title. At the moment, we're looking at Charles Leclerc versus Max Verstappen for the championship. At the moment, Mercedes are nowhere, McLaren are nowhere. The Alpines are doing well, but they're not a championship leading team, I don't think. They might get the odd win this season, but I don't think they're going to be challenging for any titles. So it's exciting this year. It's nice to have a new battle at the top, isn't it? Ferrari versus Red Bull, and it's nice to have Ferrari back again as well. And like you said, the Australian Grand Prix, we need to talk about Danny Rick, I suppose, because I feel like he's missed the boat a little bit. He's doing a bit of an Alonso career, isn't he? Where he started off very well in a great team. He's done very well. The stories came out this week from Christian Horner that they made him apparently astronomical money offers to stay at Red Bull. And he decided that, you know, Max is on the rise. I'm obviously going to be a number two driver. I need to go elsewhere. You know, which you understand that because, you know, no one wants to play second fiddle, do they? There's no point in signing a massive contract if you're going to be the second driver wherever you go. But he's kind of made some strange moves from then on, isn't he? He went to Renault and they weren't great. And he's gone to McLaren and he really struggled last year driving the car. He got a win, but, you know, that car has not been great and he struggled last year. And the win kind of came. He had a terrible first start to the season, didn't he? And then the second half came and he kind of got a bit of stride in him, and that's when his win came. But then he's sort of back to square one again now because the McLaren's not great this year. So he's had a very strange... And he's in his 30s now, isn't he, Danny Rick? So I wonder if he's sort of missed his moment a little bit there.
Yeah, sadly, it looks as though he has. And, you know, the McLaren, you know, would have been a great option for him when he moved there. But then he struggled to get used to the car. And now, of course, they've got a terrible engine in the back of it, along with all the other Mercedes teams. So... yeah, not good at all for him. It's interesting looking at the team standings after the first two races. Ferrari are on top, as you'd expect, with 78 points. Mercedes, though, are second. They're leading Red Bull in the Constructors' Championship, only by 1 point. So Mercedes on 38, Red Bull on 37. Alpine and Haas make up the rest of the top five. Charles Leclerc leaves the Drivers' Championship with Carlos Sainz in second, then Max, then George, and then Lewis Hamilton in fifth place. So we know Mercedes got their struggles. Lewis Hamilton's been talking about mental health issues this week. He's been saying that he's struggled with his mental health for many, many years. He says he becomes very emotional. I'm wondering, without taking anything away from anyone who struggles with mental health, I'm wondering, though, when he talks about becoming emotional, is that a result of just not doing well? Because, of course, he's been world champion seven times. He's used to winning races. He's used to a car that will guarantee him results. And now that's not happening. Is that causing him extra emotion and extra issues?
I mean, it's generally that thing in life, isn't it, where they say you learn more from your failures than you do, you know, the good stuff. And I do think this won't be a bad thing for him, because he's obviously a very complete driver. He's a brilliant driver. He's, you know, one of the best of all time. But, you know, to have a car that's a bit of a dog this year, at the start at least, you know, it's going to really sort of make him think about his driving, and he'll probably come out of this a better driver again. But you're right, it must be strange to have gone through so many seasons. I can't think of very many seasons where he wasn't in a championship potential car. There was a couple with McLaren, wasn't there, where he was having a bit of a wobble. But he's the only driver to ever win a race in every season he's ever been in, I think, as well, isn't he? So, you know, even the cars that aren't great, he's had wins in them. So it just goes to show you what kind of driver he is. But yeah, must be hard if you're used to that sort of success and all of a sudden it's kind of taken away from you. And they mentioned, I saw this in the press this week, where they said they think the Mercedes engine is pretty much on a par with the Ferrari engine, which surprised me. But they said the problem is the Mercedes cars seem to be porpoising more, and they just can't replicate that in the wind tunnel. So they can't work out how to get rid of the porpoising, which is then causing other issues. And it's just making the whole package really hard to get right and really hard to dial into the tyre window and all that sort of stuff. So that's interesting that they think they've got as good an engine as Ferrari, and they reckon that the Red Bull is slightly better again, and it's slightly faster on the long straights and stuff. So they're saying Red Bull best, Ferrari second, Mercedes engine third. But I'm surprised if that's level with the Ferrari engine at the moment, because it doesn't look like it in any of the cars that have got Mercedes engines, does it?
No, I mean, I was amazed at the Qatar Grand Prix, not the Qatar Grand Prix, the Saudi Arabia Grand Prix, I should say, where Hamilton said towards the end of the race he couldn't keep up with the Haas. He said, the Haas breezed past me, I tried to follow and just couldn't keep up with him. And that, you know, if you go back 12 months, that's just almost unheard of, isn't it? Mm. So the Haas with the Ferrari engine in, obviously doing a lot better. And all the Mercedes-powered teams are struggling. McLaren made gains, I think, in Saudi after their disappointing opener in Bahrain. And it'll be interesting to see if they can get their heads round more development for the Australian Grand Prix. The interesting thing for all the teams, of course, is the price cap this season. So they can't just throw money at a problem. We mentioned this. You know, Mercedes, with their 4,000 employees, in the old days, they would have gone, right, well, we'll throw £10 million at this and we'll get it sorted out. Now, they're not allowed to. And also, the engine development is sealed and locked until 2025. So they can't redesign the engine. So if it's a power issue, then they're pretty much stuck with it. They've got to design the car around a power unit. And like you say, they're really struggling to come up with a solution that doesn't cause the porpoising that we've seen so many times in the early races. And it's just becoming a bit of a nightmare for the Mercedes-powered teams. Mercedes works team, well, they're no better off than the Williams in some respects for the way the car is handling and the way it's using its tyres and all of that sort of thing. So these teams have got a real hard battle ahead of them this season.
Who would have thought we'd use the word porpoising so often in 2022 as well? It's a word that I don't think I'd ever heard that word in my life until they started doing the testing and they said, oh, look at the porpoising.
And I noticed in the earlier part of this podcast, you used the term suck it and see.
Which ironically is what's happening with the porpoising, isn't it? It's sucking the car down and then it's kind of letting it go and suck it and see what happens with the car. But yeah, it is an interesting start. And obviously when we move to the European races, that's generally where the teams start bringing more updates, isn't it? Because the expense of flying all these new parts out to these flyaway races is obviously very expensive. So I think once we hit the European races, they will kind of, you know, they'll evolve quite quickly, some of these cars, and they will catch up. But the thing is, if you look at the points from last year to the points from this year, Ferrari have got a big old gap already. I don't think Mercedes had a gap like this last year. So they are, you know, they're hitting the ground running. And if they're clever, Ferrari, and they keep pumping in these wins and these second places and stuff, they'll be uncatchable by mid-season, which, you know, it's great to see them back at the top. But just goes to show, doesn't it, that, you know, you put any driver in the best car and, you know, these drivers are all brilliant, obviously, because that's why they're in Formula One. But the minute you get that sweet spot of a car, and the only way I can liken it, we've mentioned this in the past before, when you go go-karting, there's a slight difference between go-karts, isn't there? And sometimes you qualify in one go-kart and then you race in another one. Yeah. And the difference is weird, isn't it? Sometimes the steering's a bit looser or it just slides more and you can't put your finger on what's different, but it's different and it's harder to drive and it's harder to get a lap time. So, you know, sometimes you're either faster in the race or faster in qualifying. And that's all I can put it to, really. I can just liken it to these cars just being slightly out of that perfect zone. You know, and these drivers, you know, particularly Hamilton and people like that, are used to having the best car. I mean, you've got to feel for George Russell, haven't you? 3 years he's been in that Williams, yeah, waiting to get in this Mercedes. Finally gets in the Mercedes, and it's an absolute shocker.
Well, yes, but, currently he's beating Lewis Hamilton in the standings. I mean, I think you go back to the go-kart thing. It's always interesting to me. Good go-kart drivers, and I would class me and you as decent go-kart drivers, and that's really the only thing. Well, you've raced MR2s and I raced in the Clio Cup for one season years and years ago. But that really, go-karts is what we've done. Mm-hmm. And of course, Formula One drivers come up through karting. So they'll race regionally, then they'll race nationally, then they'll race in the World Championships, the European Championships, whatever it is. So they're very, very used to handling go-karts. And in some respects, they'll have their own kart set up and their own kart team, a bit like Formula One. But it's the drivers who come from that origins of karting, like you've just described, that have to qualify in a different kart and then race in a different kart. Maybe if there's a mandatory pit stop during a race in a kart, you'll have to get into another kart. So I think we're really good at adapting our driving very, very quickly to slight nuances in the kart that we're driving, right? So, you know, we can get on track and we can be pretty much up there on the timesheets with different carts because we've learned within a couple of laps what this one's doing differently. You know, this one has a livelier back end. This one understeers. This one's a little bit more pointy on the throttle, all that sort of stuff. And you pick it up really quite quickly. I think with Formula One drivers, they're not used to that sort of thing because they've come out of karting. They've been out of karting for so long. And when they were doing the pro kart stuff, they had their own kart, their own setup, just like Formula One. Now they get into F1, they've sort of lost that muscle memory of being able to get into a car that's slightly different and be able to pick it up really quickly.
Yeah, and there's one thing driving a kart that I guarantee always makes a change, and that would be when I get in the kart and I go, this kart would be faster if I lost 3 stone.
Oh, yeah.
That's a given. Every time I go karting, I'm like, imagine how quick I could be if I lost a couple of stonage.
Oh.
But yeah, no, you are right. Go-karts are such a... It's such a brilliant way to learn to drive, isn't it? If you've got a young kid and you take them go-karting, yeah, you know, it's skills they'll take onto the road as well, because you just learn car control automatically, don't you? You learn how to skid and how to get out of a skid and how, yeah, to stop and how to, you know, go fast around corners and stuff. And you just learn some invaluable car control, which, you know, you're always then going to take to a car. And I think you can always notice it when someone's come up through karting, they've just got this style. You know, there's stories of Hamilton and drivers like that couldn't afford wet tires, so they've gone out into a race on slicks in a wet race and they've still won the race on slicks, and they've learned to control that go-kart on slick tires in the wet, which is like driving on ice, by the way. You know, and there's all these stories where they've done this, and, you know, Hamilton's dad used to stand, he used to watch where all the go-karts were breaking. He'd stand a bit further, you know, another meter or two down, and say to Lewis, right, brake when you get to me. So it taught Lewis to brake really late. And, you know, there's all these little things that they learn as kids that they just take through for the rest of their career. You know, and that makes a big difference. But like you say, you know, these guys have been out of it for so long now that they've just kind of lost that skill, I guess.
Coming soon, the Scott and Rick Driving School. yeah, I raced at a circuit in the Northeast when I was in the British Pro Kart Championship called Warden Law. It's a big outdoor circuit. And it was absolutely throwing it down. And they had none of us had wet tyres. Mm-hmm. I think there was a couple of rich kids, there normally is at these things, that did. But the majority of the field had to go out on slicks. And talk about focus, concentration, and a learning curve when you're driving a wet race on slicks, having to always do your braking in a straight line, never brake or accelerate when you're going around a corner, and you're going around the corners really slowly. But what a school that was. I mean, it was just, I think, probably one of the best learning experiences I've ever had in any form of car.
Yeah, no, totally. And, you know, that's the way these guys learn, and that's the way they take their driving skills all the way through their career. And like you said, they go into little cars and then up to bigger cars and then into big, you know, single-seaters. And, you know, some of these guys, I think for me, the most complete driver on the circuit at the moment is Fernando Alonso. I just think the stuff that guy can do in a car is unbelievable. Closely followed, I think, by Hamilton. And when I say that, I mean complete as in qualifying, racing, you know, just a complete driver. It's hard to beat Alonso for me at the moment.
So Australia is coming up this weekend. Looking forward to the race. Of course, remember that the times are different for Australia because they're down under. So practice starts at 4 a.m. on the Friday morning UK time. Second practice is 7 a.m. Qualifying starts at 7 a.m. on the Saturday. And the race itself, early start, 6 a.m. on Sunday morning. And then we're back to Europe with Imola before we head over to Miami. And the American races, you know, Formula One, very popular in America now, based largely, they think, on Netflix's Drive to Survive. Obviously, they've announced Las Vegas. We make a debut in Miami in a few weeks' time, which is going to be exciting. The Vegas racetrack doesn't look the most interesting to me, but of course, it's Vegas, so you're going to have the backdrop of them racing down the strip. The race on Saturday night as opposed to a Sunday afternoon, which is just going to make it fantastic. I mean, you can imagine the glitz and glamour they're going to throw at that Vegas race. Mm. And with that comes a warning that Monaco may lose the Formula One Grand Prix. Right. It's been on the calendar since 1955. The only time they haven't run the race was in 2020 with the COVID outbreak. It's always been about glitz and glamour in Monaco. But as we know, the circuit's not that conducive to a modern Formula One car.
Yeah, and that's the problem, isn't it? It's glitz, it's glamour, it's all about the location, but the actual track itself, not that great. You can't overtake. It's very, very small. If you've ever been to Monaco, and I went there on a day trip once, and I think I paid €16 for a milkshake, and I'm still recovering from that now. But other than that, you realise how small and how thin it is and how tiny these roads are. You know, so it will be fascinating to see how the Vegas race pans out. I'm sure I saw something this week that said it's going to be 10 p.m. American time that they're going to start the race. So like a proper late night race. I mean, that makes sense in Vegas, I guess, but 10 p.m. American time, it just seems bizarre.
Yeah, 10 p.m. American time, that means it's going to be on at 6 a.m. in Europe. Yeah.
So you understand, obviously, they're trying to get it for both audiences, aren't they? So you can get the European audience getting up early and the American audience going to bed late. But I can't think of any race that's ever been as late as sort of 10 p.m. local time. So that'll be weird for the drivers as well. They'll have to, you know, they'll probably get up late, won't they? But they will have the whole day before they then get in the cars and stuff. And then, you know, the race finishes at what, midnight? And then what, do they go gambling? Or it's just bizarre, isn't it?
They go to the Red Rooster. Oh, no, we won't go there. Right. So this weekend, Australian Grand Prix predictions, Scott?
It's got to be, you know, Ferrari against Red Bull once again, hasn't it? They've got to be up there, those two. I think the Mercedes are slowly going to start getting better as the races go on. But until they get to Europe, I don't see any massive changes for McLaren and Mercedes and those kind of teams. But I think it's between the top four. It's between Perez and Max and, of course, Carlos Sainz and Charles Leclerc as well. Leclerc's just on amazing form at the moment, just driving like a dream, isn't he? Very relaxed, very calm. Max is getting a little bit aggy, I've noticed, where he's kind of, you know, he's all of a sudden he's got a young kid himself that he's trying to fight like Hamilton was last season. So he's getting a bit aggy with that, which is going to be interesting. But yeah, it's got to be between the big two teams. And I'm going to say, I think Carlos Sainz and Perez are due a good race. They've had a lot of bad luck, and I think they're due a little bit of a good race.
Yeah, I think so. You know, Perez qualifying form last season was pretty woeful, but obviously in Saudi put it on pole position, which was his debut pole in Formula One. Can he repeat that in Australia? It would be good to see, because he would have won the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix if we hadn't have had those timing issues with the safety car and stuff. So that will be interesting going into this weekend.
And we'll be back next week to review what happens at the Australian Grand Prix.
We will. Enjoy the week. And remember, an early start on Sunday, 6 a.m. race start for Australia.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.